don't you know? The guy upstairs left us years ago. So there ain't no fate except the one you make. And there ain't no hell except the shit you take every day. So don't tell me life doesn't hurt, and that you don't need the people, cause you've got your church. You gotta take your head out of the sky, because there ain't nothing there but the satellites.
And we are the Nonprofits. I have to believe that I'm your host, Dennis Loubet, along with Matt Dillahunty, Russell Glasser,
yep,
and Beth.
Hey.
I can't explain it, but we're coming to you live from the Dillahunty International Studios in Austin, Texas. On Saturday, what's the date today? 22nd of January, 2011. And no matter what you think, the music you heard was I Am the Satellite by Brian Stieksma. Now, it can only be that this show is sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state. It has to be that the ACA voicemail at 512-371-2911 or the ACA website at www.atheist-community.org will give you more information. I just know that the nonprofits broadcast live every Saturday from 2 to 3 o'clock Central Time, and that you can participate in the show by following the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com and joining the chat room. So if you sit back and listen hard enough, you too will understand the truth of everything we say and everything we are.
Because I don't want to live in a world where that's not true.
That's right.
See it all so clearly now.
So, this is Matt for the people who can't actually recognize my voice today. I'm on the tail end of being sick. And so, today's the day where Dennis and Russell get to do most of the show.
It's a punishment from God.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. 2 days off from work where I laid in bed.
Oh.
And I think I've got all the stories.
We'll begin.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Dennis. It's just going to be you, me, and possibly a little bit of Beth chatting.
Yeah.
I'm sure I won't be able to stop talking for an entire show just because I'm sick.
Are there any announcements?
Why are you asking him to do the announcements?
I don't know, because he's the only one who knows.
The blood drive is this week.
Is there going to be a TV show tomorrow?
There is. I'm supposed to be on it. I'm hoping that I feel better tomorrow. If not, I might have to get a sub. So I don't know if you're available tomorrow or not.
I'll think about it.
I already have a sub for next Sunday because I have a conflict next weekend. So
the phones were working last week, right?
They were. There was a little bit of echo.
Yeah,
that was a problem.
Well, that'll be nice.
Yeah, I just didn't want to keep canceling multiple shows in a row, so I figure we can come in here, knock this out in an hour or so, and I can go back to bed.
Very noble of you. Yeah. Okay, so as only about 50 of you emailed us, thank you for not letting that story slip past our attention. Alabama's new governor, Robert Bentley, told a Martin Luther King Day crowd that he plans to be governor of all the people, but then added that anybody who has not accepted Jesus Christ as their savior, I'm telling you, they're not my brother and you're not my sister.
Hey, we're not people, according to them. So.
And, of course, that is technically true. We are all distant cousins, according to evolution.
Granted.
Well, and also according to that Adam and Eve bullshit. Bentley's remarks came after he delivered a warm tribute to Dr. King at the Dexter Avenue King Memorial Baptist Church in Montgomery, where the slain civil rights leader once served as pastor. I was elected as a Republican candidate, but once I became governor, I became the governor of all the people. I intend to live up to that. I'm colorblind, Bentley said in a short speech given about an hour before he took the oath of office.
Some of his best friends, I'm sure.
Yes. Well, I mean, he demonstrated that he was not a racist by saying he doesn't see color, only religion.
Right.
And there's a follow-up. Later, he apologized, and I'm making air quotes that you can't see over the radio.
Not apology?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if the words Oh, yes, it is exactly. I'm sorry if you were offended.
Offended, right.
It is almost word for word the standard classic not apology.
Meaningless tripe, yes.
It was never my intention to disenfranchise anyone, said Bentley, who was a Southern Baptist deacon. If I did make anyone of the faith feel disenfranchised, let me say I'm sorry. I did not mean to offend anyone with my comments there.
Anyone of the faith?
Yes. I didn't mean to offend anyone with what I said, but I did mean it.
And I did mean to insult every atheist on the planet.
Yes, well... so I've personally had a hard time mustering up any outrage about this because
it's an ignorant jerk off. What do you want?
You can't look that way.
Right. Okay. I mean, it's just so commonplace these days.
Yeah.
It seems like, I mean,
these dirt golems really piss me off.
Back in the 90s, when George Bush Sr. allegedly said that atheists aren't citizens, you know, that was only recorded by, I mean, that was only stated by one reporter who was saying a personal, you know, recountation of what Bush had said to him. And a lot of people have said, oh, we need to be skeptical of this sort of thing. But, I mean, I think the political climate has become such that this is not even the slightest bit surprising anymore.
No.
Unfortunately.
But I would say that those two things aren't remotely the same.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the Bush quote is true, then you had a president who's saying that a particular group of citizens shouldn't be considered citizens.
Yeah.
Right.
What the governor of Alabama did is, in a church, while speaking to other people who hold his same beliefs, stated his beliefs accurately. And what he said was, for those of you who haven't accepted Jesus Christ, you're not my brother, you're not my sister, and I want to be your brother.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing in there about, you know, you're not citizens or I'm not here to serve you or anything else. They're right when they say that this was kind of Christian code talk. I mean, it's all kind of jargon within the fold. My objection to this, though, is that when you're the governor, you should realize that remarks like this are going to have effects. You can't be so myopic.
Yes.
And you cannot, if you can't muster enough diplomacy to make at least some sort of gestures towards the people who don't share all of your beliefs, then you're just a tool.
It's not so much that I actually give a crap about being this guy's brother, you know, because I don't need to be that inbred.
Right. My brother's way cooler than him.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's not so much that I'm concerned about that as that he felt the need to designate an outsider group of American citizens.
Yeah. And, you know, there's nothing stopping us from being his brother except him.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, okay, you're the guy who cares somewhat about what the Bible says or knows it better than me. But, I mean, doesn't the Bible actually say somewhere that all men are brothers and not specifically say, you know, all Christians are brothers?
No.
Okay.
I don't think it says Christians anywhere in the Bible, actually.
It does talk about Christians in the Bible. The bulk of it is incredibly divisive, the Old Testament being divisive as the Jews being the chosen people and everybody else becomes available for subjugation.
Sure.
And then the New Testament can be interpreted in such a way that it implies to everybody walking the planet. However, there's some concern that that's a little more than dishonest, because when you look at just the words of Jesus, he never said that he was speaking to anybody but the Jews.
Okay.
It was later interpretations that extended that to Gentiles as well.
Well, where does "there is neither Jew nor Gentile"
Paul
come from? Paul.
Okay. Yeah. And so there are passages in the Bible that you can look at that way.
As far as I'm concerned, Paul is every bit as responsible for Christianity, if not more so.
Yeah, yes. I would say more.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the people who believe that the Bible is their holy book, since they believe all of it, including the Paul stuff, is essentially the Word of God, they're going to believe what Paul said.
They're Paulists.
As divine.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's a way to spin any of this. So when I right. said no, I was mostly working to build this point.
Got it.
That when it talks about, when Christians and Christian history talks about brothers, it's not every person on the planet is not your brother. There are brothers and sisters in Christ, and then there is the rest of the world, and you're not supposed to be of the rest of the world. You are supposed to be separate from the rest of the world, anointed, etc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so but, yeah, peace on earth and goodwill towards men.
It's just, to me, it's just dumb.
You want to be like Jesus, shouldn't you have to be a Jew?
Well, Paul kind of addressed that a little bit, too, and did the whole, no, you don't necessarily have to be.
What did Jesus say about it?
little or nothing. To me, it's just kind of dumb. I think Russell's right. This is unsurprising and may, for the most part, have almost been a non-story, except that when somebody so publicly puts their foot in their mouth like that, it no longer matters if they're talking in code. Their motivations are suspect. Whether or not they're going to be able to fairly represent all of the people, all of the citizens, now comes into question. And plus, I think it demonstrates that they're lacking in intellect and diplomacy. So,
rather,
but hey, it's Alabama.
Last time we picked on Kentucky, taken to task for making fun of places where people say stupid things. So I will make a blanket disclaimer that the fact that there are a lot of stupid people in Alabama or Kentucky or whatever does not mean that any of you individual listeners who happen to be listening from those illustrious states are not way, way smarter than your dumbass elected officials.
We are from Texas, after all.
Yeah.
Yes, we have no room to talk.
And here in Texas...
But now what's weird is that, you know, those southern states, they used to be... Weren't they? Didn't they used to be one of the most polite? Right? All the, you know, ma'am and sirs. And...
I don't think slavery was very polite.
No, that wasn't true. Granted.
I thought you were going to defend that you're part of the country.
There was a veneer of hyper politeness, but
she's not from the South. She's from Tennessee.
What? Tennessee's the South.
Yeah.
You can't keep grabbing that mic like that. It makes noise every time.
Clonk, clonk.
Squeak!
Okay. But here in Texas, where we have for many years had the same group of dumbasses doing the same bunch of things, they're at it again. The Texas State Board of Education, which comes up every year, I've just gotten a press release from our good friends at Texas Freedom Network, who tell us that it's 2003 again. In a move that should not surprise anyone, a well-known creationist/intelligent design group appeared on a list of publishers that have indicated an intent to submit science curriculum materials for approval by the Texas State Board of Education later this spring. The formal inclusion of this creationist group means Texas will once again be ground zero for creationist attacks on 21st century science, TFN President Kathy Miller said. In 2009, the State Board of Education approved new science curriculum standards that opened the door to creationist materials in Texas classrooms. Today we saw that one prominent creationist group intends to walk through that door, Miller said. Getting their materials in public schools has long been a top priority for creationists, and it's clear that they intend to make Texas their flagship. Teaching inaccurate information rejected by the scientific community would be a huge disservice to Texas kids and a major setback for science education everywhere.
There's no end.
Yeah,
it just keeps coming again. It's just whack-a-mole. Again and again.
Now, bear in mind, in 2003, when this happened, we had a really good turnout of people heading out to the State Board of Education. I was among them, and we all stayed in this big room surrounded by press and government officials until about 2 in the morning. And we argued against this, what at the time was, teach the strengths and weaknesses of science And I have no doubt that in the intervening 8 years, the meme has evolved in some way again.
Oh, yeah.
But we won that time. So don't be too discouraged, and I do encourage people to show up and make a day of this thing. I am seriously considering it.
But how tired are we?
Pretty damn tired.
Man.
Okay, so there will be a public hearing on these materials at the board in April. The board will take a final vote on approval or rejection of these science materials at the conclusion of that April meeting. Is the board much more creationist than it was back then? They at least lost Don McElroy. I know Terry Leo's still around.
It's not more. It's just barely slightly less.
Good. Then we're going to win again.
Yes, we should win. I'm going to have to look into this some more because I don't know why they're reviewing curriculum that wasn't on the agenda to be reviewed.
Hmm.
I mean, this was supposed to be, we did science and then we did social studies. And then this year the focus was going to be on health and one other that I've forgotten.
Well, anyway, go to tfn.org for more information and sign yourself up.
Now, is the web or anything like that making it less of an issue? The decisions in Texas less of an issue nationwide?
No, not really.
It's still,
because
all the schools depend on brick and mortar textbooks.
For people who are new to this concept, I mean, okay, I'm not going to say that I'm the most in touch person with what's happening in elementary schools these days. You know, I've got a kid moving up; he's in third grade now. Not an age to receive evolution yet. Although he probably understands it better than most kids entering high school by now.
And all creationists.
Right. but just for those of you who are not up on Texas politics, what happened was the reason that they like to go after Texas in particular is that Texas is the biggest state, or Texas and California are the two biggest states that purchase textbooks. So basically, if you want to purchase it, if you want to be a textbook author and be taken seriously, you got to get published in Texas, which means that if Texas education standards say, oh, you have to put in evolution is only a theory in there, you're going to do it or you're going to lose a huge chunk of the market, because stuff that gets published in Texas is then replicated everywhere else in the country.
It's all about how much of the market you've got.
Yeah. So, guys, don't be thinking this is just Texas and I don't live in Texas, so I don't need to worry about it. You need to worry about it if you've got, you know, if you've got kids or you're worried about the next generation of people who are going to be running your state.
Right.
The good news is that Texas textbooks don't end up absolutely everywhere, and individual states can counter this by requiring school book publishers to publish addendums and other versions. I used to work for a company that manufactures textbooks, and they would do a variety of special versions. It'd be the Texas edition, the Kentucky edition, the California edition.
Oh, wow.
They do lots of different editions for different states. So one thing is to make sure that the local – Texas is a single adoption state. So they adopt one textbook for the entire state, and a lot of other states aren't like that.
That's really weird. So is there – California science and Texas science?
Well, a lot of it comes down to examples.
Familiarity.
Some of them would, you know, you would make references to Texas history in Texas books, in California history, California books. Also, the ethnical diversity plays a role.
That makes sense.
If you're distributing to schools that have a high Hispanic population, you don't want to see a whole bunch of little white kids in the book. And if you're in an urban area, you want.
But so it doesn't so much have a bearing on the heliocentric theory.
Yeah, it's not like 2 + 2 equals 6 in Illinois or something.
Right.
I mean,
though pi in Alabama might be.
If you want to know how technology is eventually going to change textbooks, and I mean, I think that technology is already in a position to do this here, and I'm just speculating on this as a technology geek. Eventually, what will probably be able to happen is that people will be able to custom order books that have like chapters that they can pick and choose. As a matter of fact, I think our friend Thad actually works at a place that does something along those lines.
That's weird. I'm not.
I mean, it makes sense, right? Because, I mean, publishing stuff should be getting easier and easier. All you've got is a bunch of data, which is, you know, book chapters in PDF format. People can already produce. I just was at Urban Dictionary for some stupid reason the other day, and I was on some page that somebody had made a definition of something, and then right there on the page it said, order a mug with this on it. And then, and then there was a picture of the mug, which was generated on the fly, clearly.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
On the page.
Right.
So, I mean, you can do that for mugs, you can do that for T-shirts, you should be able to do it for books. Of course, that could be an even bigger quagmire, because then creationist teachers will do all they can to order books that have no evolution or have the most creationist things they can find.
Right, you're more, I mean, keeping it local sounds good, but it's like then you're more at the mercy of whatever's local, you know?
Right.
It's like, yikes.
And if you're under Alabama Governor Bentley, was it?
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Then you got problems. Okay, next story.
Yes.
The Christening Without Christianity. Oh, no, I'm just reading blind now.
Uh-oh.
The Christening Without Much Christianity. Anglican Church offers baptism light to attract non-worshippers.
Oh, that's peculiar.
Where's this? Church of England baptism services may be rewritten to remove some references to Christianity. The plan for a new baptism light service designed to make christenings more interesting to non-churchgoers will be considered next month by the church's parliament, the General Synod.
So what? It's all about the water?
What? Yeah, what?
You're dirty. Here, come here. We can wash you off.
Yes. It's not exactly the blood of the lamb, but...
To me, this is a bunch of people who are so convinced that this is magic that they're willing to disguise it and try and hide it.
Yeah.
It's like, we really need to baptize as many babies as possible, so let's just pretend that it's not magic, even though we really know it is. That's kind of the mentality that I think they're using.
It could be.
Well, I mean, they've still got a picture of a guy in a funny hat dunking a baby. And
there's always
like going to
be a guy in a funny hat.
Funny hat, yeah.
I think that what this is about is rituals. People still want rituals of religion, social rituals, but they don't want all the religious baggage that comes with it. That's why, you know, atheist groups exist, you know, like, to provide social support like churches. People still want some sort of, you know, ceremony when their baby comes into the world. I mean, there's a whole lot of secular weddings nowadays, but there isn't really any kind of secular baby ritual.
Well, it's the handing out of cigars.
It. Yeah.
I mean, obviously Jews are big on this, but I mean, what I've noticed in my own growing up is that basically when I was younger, I had like grandparents who cared about the Jewish stuff. And then I had my mom who cared about keeping the Jewish traditions alive, which is why we had like Friday dinners with candles and stuff, and I had a bar mitzvah. And then I grew up thinking I'm going to be like my mom, but as I've gotten older, I find that I'm not even interested in making the pretense of going to temple or giving my kid a bar mitzvah. It just seems like a waste of time. So I think that the process of secularizing these traditions really is a step in people just losing interest in it altogether.
Mm-hmm.
Over a couple of generations.
It may be a case.
What is the draw of ritual?
It allows for inclusion. It allows for building relationships. We like celebration and community and stuff. And so getting people together to have a party to celebrate something, it's like, why did we have a Christmas party.
Right. Well, you're talking party.
Well, that's really okay. What this is.
When you when I was younger and I would go to temple, there's a feeling that, like, you know, this is a room full of people that maybe I've never seen before, but it's like we're all Jews here. So we're part of these people are my people, you know?
Right.
It's kind of like that with the atheist group too.
So
in a way,
I guess, you know, an atheist sitting in at a huge Catholic ceremony would be bored to tears at the pomp and circumstance and all that stuff. But everybody else enjoys it like people enjoy a parade.
Matt, when you go to church, I mean, as you have a few times, do you still feel a little twinge of nostalgia ever?
No.
Okay.
No, I can say that I'm completely over that.
Was there a period when you did?
Sure.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
It's not like I flipped a light switch.
You lose it over time.
I can go to weddings and funerals and regular services, and I don't experience any of the kind of, I don't know, feelings that you would want to feel. But I think Beth's right that this is partly about people wanting ritual. We are ritualistic. You know, even those of us who are secular have our little traditions and rituals and things that we do. They're not perhaps as ornate as some of the religious ones.
Right. I suppose.
Right. And I mean,
I'd have to think to find out what I do ritually.
Wait, I can't remember what your religious background is, Dennis.
Mine? None.
None. Okay.
He used to be a nun.
That explains it.
Yep. Never grew up with the rituals.
Well, I see you broke the habit. But I mean, also, you know, I was listening to some back episodes of Ask an Atheist the other day, and I happened to be going through the period when it was right before Christmas, and they were talking about how atheists can enjoy Christmas too.
Yeah.
And even kind of admonished people who don't enjoy Christmas. And I believe I've mentioned before, and I know people in the room disagree with me, I don't enjoy or care about Christmas stuff. It means nothing to me, and that's partly because I didn't grow up with it.
Yeah. It's one of those things. So I think a part of this is ritual, but I think there is a from the point of view of the church, though.
Yeah.
What reason would they have to scrub the Christianity out of their religion to make it more appealing to other people?
Yes, you have a good point.
And I think there's two reasons. One is that some of them are convinced that it actually is magic, and so that they're baptizing these people's kids, even if they don't realize it. It's in much the same way that people think that I'm working for Satan, even if I don't believe Satan exists.
Yeah, yeah.
That if they could actually just baptize my kids and get the magic in without, you know, me realizing it,
they'd all be okay.
That it'd be okay. And the other aspect of this is if they can make it more palatable to do these simple tradition things, then they may be able to draw them back in fully later.
Right.
Right.
And bear in mind, this is happening
in England.
It's a
gateway ritual.
This is happening in England.
Among Anglicans who are barely Christian in the first place.
Right. Which is like much farther along the path towards just sort of drifting away from religious traditions entirely than we are.
It's like an effort to swell their pathetic numbers.
Yeah. And yet here's a guy, I'm looking at the picture. He's in a, you know, pointy white hat with gold trimming. And it just seems to me what this picture suggests more than anything else is a guy who doesn't know how to do anything else, desperately struggling to assert that there is some kind of point to what he does.
He's been relegated to a party clown, you know? I mean, hi, I'm in the funny outfit with the big shoes and the hat, you know?
Well, it kind of reminds me.
Jeweled basin.
It kind of reminds me of Reform Judaism.
Yeah.
Where you don't actually have to believe.
Right.
This becomes about tradition and about the people, and about the history, and not so much about the supernatural.
Yeah.
And so there are plenty of Reformed Jews who are atheists, who actually go to temple and engage in the rituals. And I can't even begin to remotely understand why, because it's something I couldn't do. but I understand that they're doing this and that, you know, it's secular, et cetera.
Means something.
It's tradition.
Them.
And so, you know, hey, if it makes you feel good, that's fine.
And I tell you, I tried. I went to my sister's temple and I was like, oh, how nice. These are people who just sort of barely believe. And, yeah. and you know, I can be in there and feel good about being in with people who probably have something in common with me. And then the rabbi still, you know, talks in an abstract, feel good way about God. And I'm like, I just can't get into this. I couldn't come here every week.
Yeah, it's not the kind of thing I can do. And, you know, while I don't want to get overly critical about the people that do, because, I mean, you know, by and large, do whatever it is that you enjoy and makes you feel good, et cetera.
Sure. Makes no difference.
But I wonder if it's true that it makes no difference. If that by engaging in these rituals from a secular perspective, if you aren't inadvertently kind of adding credibility to the rituals from the religious perspective.
You legitimize
them. If nothing else, the numbers, yeah.
So I go back and forth on that.
That's why we need to make new rituals.
Secular rituals.
Well,
yes.
The problem with that is, what incentive is there for people
right.
to follow them?
Yeah, we don't believe in something.
Yeah,
like
on the one hand, I'm not necessarily opposed. I think that's one possible, you know, mechanism. But maybe it's the case that eliminating ritual altogether is the solution. I mean, I don't know that works, because it seems that we all have some kind of little tradition, ritual, whether it's, you know, a shirt we wear or something. I don't know.
Maybe we should, you know, try to generate some sort of tradition ritual about the UK being below 50% believer.
I think if we were going to work towards new rituals, I think the best thing we could do is make rituals that make sense. Rituals that are productive in addition to the pleasure that they
provide. There's a bigger problem that I see here, which is that religion serves a role which is kind of irreplaceable as a centralized authority that just basically says this and only this is what you ought to do. It's like, okay, we already have a potential ritual that people could get behind. Festivus.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
Seinfeld made up Festivus, and a lot of atheists observe it in sort of a humorous, satirical way. Festivus could really catch on, but there's no central body requiring every atheist to do that. And so people are inevitably going to splinter off into their own individual traditions. It's kind of like cable news now. It's like when I was a kid, Walter Cronkite was on CBS every night. And as far as I was concerned, he was the news. There were three channels.
Right.
They were competing to be the people that you listen to for half an hour and find out what happened all day. Now, there is not any... It's not possible to have an equivalent of Walter Cronkite, because in addition to having like a billion different TV channels, people don't read newspapers. They get stuff from the web.
Right.
You know, which has a billion different bloggers who all have their unique spin on it, and you just sort of land in the one that appeals to your personal tastes. And that's why I don't think it's possible to just make rituals that everybody does, because everybody is kind of not required to do what everybody else is doing.
That works for people, you know, that's true. That may be true for people like us. But, I mean,
we're talking about atheists here. They are like us.
Oh, well, yeah, okay. We're talking about atheists, but, I mean.
Well, it needs to be something that's personal. The best rituals, right. The ones that are most ubiquitous are the ones that are personal. Things like weddings, christenings.
Yeah.
Things that relate directly to people and families.
Just so you know, my wedding is not going to be very traditional at all.
Yes, but you're having a wedding.
That's true.
That is the ritual aspect of it.
Just letting people know that there are alternatives they can do. Letting people know, well, we decided to do this for these reasons. The fact that people are trying these alternative forms, you know, non-traditional weddings, secular weddings. Somebody even brought up naming ceremonies, which I don't really know anything about, in the chat room. The fact that people can do different things that still serve these purposes that in itself is a good thing.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you have never watched My Big Redneck Wedding, go for it. Watch an episode, because I sit there and in sheer disbelief. It's the most ridiculous thing I think I've seen.
Wow.
Those are not the way you want to do your rituals.
Well, that's the thing, though, is that they're engaged in a ritual and they're doing it the way they want and they enjoy it, and good for them. Do whatever crazy shit you want.
Wow, I'll have to see it, because I have no clue as to what that involves.
It's probably what you'd imagine. We're going to get married on the back of a pickup truck in a mud slick, and we're going to blow up our wedding cake with M80s and shoot squirrels and drink and...
Well, some of that stuff sounds fun. I mean, the M80s sounds great.
Camouflage
wedding dresses.
Antlers on a cake.
We're gonna make a drinking fountain out of some concrete mixing buckets and a hose and a pump from the fish tank.
Yeah, and it's not even done in an ironic sense.
Oh no,
no.
This one woman sent her boyfriend and three or four of his male friends to the Goodwill shop to pick her out a wedding dress like a day or so before the wedding. And so they're up there. The guys are up there trying this on to see if they can find the one that fits her and bring it back. And she says it's the ugliest dress she's ever seen. But she cuts off the whole bottom part, wears the top part with some jeans and boots. So, yeah, if you're curious about how rituals have changed, feel free to check out My Big Redneck Wedding.
It's almost as if you can kind of respect that, because they're just going with what they think is good enough, or we'll do it this way. What the hell? We don't care what anyone thinks.
Yeah.
It's almost respectable.
You kind of admire that in a way. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm fine with it. I just...
It wouldn't be to my taste, but it's a matter of taste.
Yeah, it is a taste thing.
So on the dark side of being in the in-group, there is always the out-group, and that's why in Georgia, the House of Mercy homeless shelter refuses to serve gay and lesbian people.
Whoa!
Last week, the National Alliance to End Homelessness, straight homelessness anyway, released its annual report, State of Homelessness in America, that sought to document the problems afflicting our nation's homeless population. Oh, it's not them that's the problem.
Right.
One of the major findings of the report was that during the economic recession, the number of homeless people increased 3%, or by about 20,000 people, and the number of homeless families increased 4%. With state and municipal budgets continuing to be squeezed, the poor economy, much of the duty of caring for these people has fallen to private charities. Yet, as Change.org's Michael A. Jones reports, one of these private charities, Columbus, Georgia's ironically named House of Mercy, is practicing discrimination by refusing to serve gay and lesbian homeless people. Earlier this month, two women checked into the House of Mercy along with their children. Soon the operators of the facility began to suspect that the two women were lesbians and promptly kicked them out. Both women told the local news they weren't even gay, and one of them said she came from an abusive home. Elder Bobby Harris, the director of the organization, told the local press that he would welcome non-practicing gay people.
I'm pretty sure that most of them have got it right by now. I don't practice anymore.
Non-practicing.
But even if the residents were to engage in sexual behavior on their own time off the presence, they would be rejected.
Good grief, House of Mercy.
So they're so hateful that if they even suspect that you're gay, they will kick you and another random woman and your kids out
on the street.
What about all those fornicators and shellfish eaters and people that wear polyester? What about all that?
I know.
Yeah. And... Wasn't it?
I think they should kick out people.
Wasn't their Jesus
polyester
character kicked out and then forced to go to a manger?
If I may wax liberal for a second.
Wax away.
This is why it's good to have some kind of impassionately dispensed state-funded support for people who wind up on the streets. Because if you rely on private charities, first of all, historically, they never take up all the slack that actual funded programs do. Mm-hmm. And second of all, they're free to just discriminate and, you know, and only serve people who, I mean, they're free to become dictators. Be like, you know, you want to eat? Stop fucking.
Right. Yikes.
Well, you know, even as much as I support secular charities and atheist charities and things like that, anytime you've got a charity group with an additional agenda in addition to the agenda of whatever the charity's focused on, mm-hmm. you've mm-hmm. got a potential conflict.
Yeah.
And the reason that you have government-sponsored charities, government regulations about charities, is to make sure that those conflicts do not inhibit the work of the charity. And so, in much the same way that, yeah, it's okay for the Boy Scouts to be discriminating dicks if they want to, as long as they're not taking public funding, it's okay for this House of Mercy to be discriminating. Well, I don't want to say it's okay. It's legal.
Yeah.
For them to discriminate this way.
But it's not.
As long as they're not taking public funding.
And I support these guys continuing to exist, but it is a massive mistake to rely on these guys as the only people that will help the poor.
I don't support them existing. I mean, as a matter of law, I'm fine with the fact that they exist.
I'm fine with people just saying, here, I'll give you some food if I like you.
Well, I'm fine with them existing. I'm not fine with the idea. We can do better.
Yes.
And I would rather see better charities put these other charities out of business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's one thing we hear a lot is, you know, well, if I'm not going to give to the Salvation Army, who do I give to? Because certain charities are ubiquitous and they are good at what they do. Yeah. And by and large, when I don't have other options, I'll go that route. But there are plenty of secular charities. And a Google search will find them. There's a number of groups that even listed them, including Share.
Yeah. Does the phrase "no room at the inn" mean anything to these people?
Uh-huh.
Poor. If it's a good thing Mary didn't come to that inn with, you know, another Mary.
Well, she came on a donkey, didn't she? Mm. That's even worse. They might suspect her and the donkey.
She wasn't from Mexico.
Of course, sometimes people who work for the government also slip through the cracks and pull this kind of shit. I cannot remember if we've already discussed this story. It's been a few weeks, I think.
Are you talking about John?
The military?
Oh, no. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think we addressed this one.
Okay. Sergeant Justin Griffith was furious last month when a mandatory army test asked him questions about his spirituality and found him lacking. As an atheist, the Fort Bragg soldier didn't see any way he could honestly answer the questions and receive a passing score. So they're giving him a psych test.
Pretty much.
While he's in the Army. Immediately after finishing the test, Griffith wrote a blog about his frustrations. Griffith's complaints soon caught the attention of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, which is demanding that the Army stop making soldiers take the test because they say it's unconstitutional. The test is part of a program known as Comprehensive Soldier Fitness, or CSF. The Army initiated the $125 million program in 2008 in an effort to reduce suicides and post-traumatic stress disorder, which have spiked during the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. I'm not seeing this particular story going into details of the test, so I'm just going to say some stuff that I remember in particular, which was that as part of this psych test, they were asked stuff like, do you believe that there is a higher power watching you and giving purpose to your life? And if you answer no, because you're an atheist, then, you know, their psych test came back negative.
Red flag pops up.
Specifically saying, this person doesn't believe there's meaning in his life and we recommend immediate counseling or else.
The alarms go off and the door slams shut. And
So that is really kind of disturbing.
The
government organizations should not be in the business of psychologically evaluating people and, evaluating people as unfit. excuse me, as evaluating people as unfit based on their lack of religious beliefs.
Right.
The problem here, I mean, the government has a responsibility to make sure that their soldiers are, you know, psychologically stable.
Yes,
people
yes,
like Lochner
of course.
Don't.
The problem is that they went to pseudoscience and religion,
right,
yep,
for advice on how best to do this, rather than going to actual scientists and, you know, clinical therapists, psychologists, people who actually have training in dealing with post-traumatic stress and combat readiness and things like that. And they thought, hey, we'll just add this spiritual readiness part to, you know, to the evaluation. And it shows in the results.
Also, I feel like the guy who was responsible for this is also somebody who came up with the idea that it was okay for the army to torture, but I cannot find that story right now.
It's sort of like it's the religious version of, you know, forcing people to take the polygraph tests and stuff.
Yeah, you know, which don't
it's
work.
It's like, yeah, which don't work. So
we got 10 minutes left. Okay.
Give or
trucking
take.
Trucking right along. Giles Schools, Give God Space. Will return 10 Commandments display to buildings.
Huh?
Okay, the short version is that the Freedom from Religion Foundation did a cease and desist against these people saying, you know, you need to take the Ten Commandments down. And the school superintendent took them down. And then the school board voted unanimously to override the superintendent.
Oh, wow.
And put the Ten Commandments back up. I love the quote in the middle of this. It wasn't a decision we took lightly, and it wasn't a decision based on our personal beliefs.
Oh, yeah, sure.
These people need to be sued.
Yeah.
We need to make it financially painful for these schools to thumb their noses at the Constitution. Because this is what happens in little southern schools.
They do whatever they want.
They blatantly go against the separation of church and state. And because nobody, you know, a student or parent has to complain. And that's usually a public record. And people find out who you are and they drum you out of town.
That's right.
And so nobody complains. So it keeps going on and on. And if somebody contacts the FFRF, you know, sometimes a letter's all it takes. But sometimes they get a letter and they just say, fuck them. All these Northerners, which I've heard, all these people from Wisconsin trying to tell us down in Alabama or Georgia or Virginia what to do.
Right.
We're good Christians down here.
One problem with the lawsuit thing is that you end up, first of all, you end up punishing the taxpayers and the students. It's not like this money comes out of the school board's pockets. It's the school district.
Yeah, I mean, if we could personally sue the people who are responsible for it, that would
be better.
A lot better.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. How else are you going to make them stop?
Well, you're just going to have to have... You're going to have to keep having court rulings and judges until, you know, that... I think that the thing to do is to point out this particular problem. Not so much the Ten Commandments thing, but this is blatantly unconstitutional. This is an unwinnable case. And these people are standing up saying, well, we didn't do this on behalf of our beliefs. My aching fucking ass, you didn't. And what you're doing is specifically taking actions that are going to cost the taxpayers money, that are going to cost the students, and it's all because you're trying to support an ideology. And I think if you start bringing up the amount of money that these fucktards are wasting in order to do this, I think you might make more headway than...
Yeah,
just having another court ruling about the Ten Commandments case.
Take them to court and then make sure that there's a big pointing finger at the people responsible. These are the people who are costing you all this money.
It causes a chilling effect. Like in Saudi Daisy, the Saudi Daisy prayer case, they didn't have to actually have a lawsuit. Just the threat of a lawsuit was enough. But the threat of a lawsuit isn't enough here because they know it could happen, and they're saying bring it on.
Well, you've got that deal with John Freshwater, the guy who was burning crosses into his... students' arms.
Yeah.
Finally, this whole ordeal is over. he has finally been fired because there's this lengthy process with review boards and other stuff. And it only cost $900,000 to get him fired.
Holy crap.
$900,000 to fire somebody.
$1 million to get rid of a...
Yeah. I mean, there's some big problems that need to be fixed when it costs us $900,000 to get a guy fired for burning crosses in a little kid's arms.
Yeah. I don't know what to say.
I'm inclined to be cautious about agreeing with that statement, because when I think about all the people who are trying to get P.Z. Myers fired all the time for expressing his atheist opinions on a blog that's not connected to his school, there's a sense in which I would like that to be difficult.
Yeah.
Well, I'd say that there's a big difference between a guy expressing his opinion on something that's unrelated to his school and a guy who is part of his duties as a teacher.
Yeah.
Is burning his students' arms with crosses.
Yeah. And that.
And, of course, there's a difference between letters from kooks and letters from lawyers.
Yeah. I don't know. The money issue is one that's going to keep coming up.
Right.
It's the only bludgeon we've got.
Okay. Luckily, we're running out of time at the same time that we're running out of stories.
There's a couple stories.
Let's see. Giles School gives God space. Did I just read that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
Moment of silence in Illinois?
No, I hadn't heard that one.
All right, then.
It's back.
In Illinois, law requiring a daily moment of silence in public schools is back in effect after a two-year hiatus. Federal Judge Robert Gettleman lifted an injunction on the law's enforcement, and the State Board of Education notified districts Friday, a day later. The 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago ruled in October that the law approved in 2007 is constitutional because it doesn't specify prayer. The decision reversed a 2009 ruling by Gettleman calling the law unconstitutional. The court said legislators stressed the moment of silence's secular and practical purpose in settling students down at the start of the school day.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Parent Rob Sherman, an atheist who filed a challenge to the law, says he plans to fight it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Opinions on moments of silence?
Yow.
It's just bullshit. The students don't care. They just sit there, they do their homework, they do whatever they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have anything
except
to do with religion. It's just the stupidest thing legislators could possibly waste time on.
I advise students to bring in Game Boys and play them with the sound off. That's silent.
Let's
see if they're cool with that.
I'm pretty sure most schools would not allow that.
Yeah.
Although now, with everybody having cell phones with games and apps and stuff
texting.
I don't know. It's a whole different world from when I went to school back in the olden days.
How so?
But how would they object to however a student used that minute?
Because the best game I ever took to school was that little. It was like the size of a whole Game Boy, and it was a football game that just had blips on it where you moved the one blip.
From Tyco or something?
Yeah. So you had to up and down to move the blip around the other blips.
They had little machines that were shaped like arcade, except they were all based on LEDs.
Yeah.
So they would have Pac-Man, and then just a Pac-Man lights up here and then here.
Yep.
They were so lame, but...
They were the most awesome thing.
At the time.
They were incredible.
Yes.
I was a master at that football game after a while. It was just you'd go up and then down, and then all the way across the bottom and up and down all the way across the top and touchdown.
Yeah.
So, not in my backyard.
Oh?
Yeah. BZ posted this. Tenants in a pricey Vancouver high-rise are protesting the construction of a hospice nearby.
Oh, right.
A hospice. So you're in your high rise, and next to you, they're putting in a nice medical facility.
Right.
Isn't that a plus?
Sure, from my point of
view. Well, it is, unless you're into particular Asian superstitions, Because death is the yin and live is the yang, a letter to the hospital read. If the yin and the yang are next to each other, death will bring bad luck, meaning sickness and even death. The ghosts of the dead will invade and harass the living.
Oh, I see. So they're afraid of ancient Indian burial ground syndrome.
Yes.
Oh, brother.
Please don't bring your old people and put them next door to us, because when they die, they will invade my kitchen.
What century is this?
Isn't there a hill somewhere, or maybe an ice floe that we can put them on?
So, yeah.
Just tell them that there's iron used in the construction of the high-rise, and iron is anathema to ghosts. And so, you know, give them another bullshit explanation as to why they don't have to worry. And problem solved. Huh? Yeah.
Directly across the street, we'll be making use of the old fire station and moving a hearse in there and spray painting it white and giving ourselves jumpsuits so that we can go bust those ghosts.
Who are you going to call?
That's a long lead to a lame joke right there. I'm sick. Forgive me.
Okay. I'm kind of out of stuff.
Yeah, there's one last thing to hit.
Wrap it up. Yeah. Okay.
There's one last thing to hit.
What's that?
An interesting letter reveals that the Vatican was officially instructing its clergy to hide pedophilia cases from civil authorities. Signed by the late Archbishop Luciano Sorrero, Pope John Paul II's diplomat to Ireland, the letter instructs Irish bishops that their new policy of making the reporting of suspected crimes mandatory gives rise to serious reservations of both a moral and canonical nature. Storio wrote the canon law, which required abuse allegations and punishments to be handled within the church, must be meticulously followed. Any bishop who tried to impose punishments outside the confines of canon law would face the highly embarrassing position of having their actions overturned on appeal in Rome. Child abuse activists in Ireland said the 1997 letter demonstrates that the protection of pedophile priests from criminal investigation was not only sanctioned by Vatican leaders, but ordered by them. The letter's of huge international significance because it shows that the Vatican's intention is to prevent reporting abuse to criminal authorities. And if that instruction applied here, it applied everywhere.
Wow. It's, and many consider this a smoking gun.
Yeah, it's, you know, I don't know how much more you need before you can indict a criminal organization. I think it's embarrassing that we have basically allowed superstition and popularity of a really dumb religious idea to build to the point where it has become an untouchable. I mean, it's criminal.
Yeah.
No two fucking ways about it. It is criminal.
Any other organization with the same problems be shut down, torn apart. And
that entire organization needs to be sued into bankruptcy, and we will turn Vatican City into a shelter for the homeless, the disenfranchised, the abused, everybody who suffered at the hands of that atrocity that marches around the planet with impunity.
Right. That sexually abuses small children and then presumes to tell us about morality.
Yeah. It just, it's a sad, sad world that we've
that there are still
built
Catholics. It was amazing.
Yeah, how can anybody in good conscience still support the Catholic Church? I mean, I understand how they can, because, well, we don't support the church. We support, you know, Jesus. Bite me. Well, I tell you what, if you don't support the church and you support Jesus, what kind of magical fucking God do you believe in who has allowed this group of assholes to parade around the planet and destroy right. the lives of people and set up this
while
kind of cabal? All in his name. What kind of God allows that? What the hell is wrong with you people?
Yeah, you are complicit.
I'm sick. I'm operating on like a quarter brain today, and I can fucking see this.
I want to. Okay, so super briefly, I think we're all, the hour's about up. But I want to mention, I feel like we've been getting a lot of email recently that asks if we think that Jesus really existed.
Yeah.
And since I replied to one recently, I just want to, like, toss out the quick answer to that. It's a topic we've touched on before, but, you know, new listeners come in all the time, and this is what I have always generally said since I really thought about it, like, last year.
Okay.
You're asking the wrong question.
Yep.
Doesn't matter. It's entirely possible that the character of Jesus in the Bible is based on a guy that somebody knew and is sort of like that guy, in the same way that Cosmo Kramer from Seinfeld is really based on a guy named Kenny Kramer that Larry David knew. If you asked if Kramer is a real person, in one sense, the answer is yes. He's
right.
Based on a real guy. But if you ask, and if you ask if Jesus is a real person, the answer is maybe. It's way too far back in time to find out.
Right.
People didn't keep very good records at that point. You know, historians don't particularly say that Jesus definitely did not exist. They also are kind of hesitant to conclusively say that he did exist. But one thing that you can be pretty sure about is that the stuff in the Bible that it says Jesus did, like walking on water and healing the blind, almost certainly didn't happen because it doesn't measure up to any historical standards we've ever heard of.
Right.
Yeah, one of the examples...
That's my word on the topic.
One of the things that I've talked about in the past a lot is that in much the same way that we don't have sufficient justification to say, yes, Jesus existed, I don't think we have justification to say, no, Jesus did not exist.
Right.
And frankly, I don't care. Because when you're talking about one of these people, you list all the things that you know about them. List all the things that are reported about a historical individual. And then see which ones you can confirm and which ones you can't. And then you kind of weigh the claims about that individual. So when you take somebody like, you know, George Washington, we have all these different claims about him. And then there's this cherry tree claim.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is clearly mythical.
It's apocryphal.
I don't think it's going to, it's you know, anybody's right. going to object to me claiming that he didn't actually refuse to tell a lie.
Yeah. The fact that there's a false story about George Washington floating around out there doesn't mean that it's not based on a real guy still.
Yeah.
Or that George Washington isn't a real historical figure.
The problem is that when you list all the things that we know about Jesus, or all the things that are reported about Jesus, absolutely none of them can be confirmed, right down to the name.
Right.
Right.
And those that are significant and necessarily tied to his existence are almost certainly not true, as Russell was pointing out.
Right.
So you're left with, hey, here's this itinerant rabbi, you know, who some people thought was the Messiah, and he preached a bunch of stuff. I find nothing remarkable about that, and I have no problem at all accepting that there very likely may have been a person like that, or many people like that.
Sure.
Right.
So, you know, I think that it's a waste of time to sit around, well, can you prove Jesus existed? Well, can you prove that he didn't exist? And blah, blah, blah. I don't care. I can tell you this. I'm pretty sure that zombies didn't get up and walk into town on that day.
You'd think somebody would have noted that down on a piece of paper.
I'm pretty sure that the walking on water and raising of the dead and healing of the sick and the blind and stuff, pretty sure that didn't happen. And you most definitely can't prove it.
Right, and it's like people will say, there's more evidence that Jesus was real than that Socrates was real, or that Caesar was real.
Well, they're wrong about Caesar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and Caesar is actually a really good case in point, because there are lots of things written down about Caesar, and historians are pretty damn sure that he lived. But there's also that claim that he was a god.
God,
yeah.
Nobody believes that. It's okay that we can separate the existence of a guy from the crazy myths that have sprung up around him.
Yep. Well, on that note, Dennis, you want to close us out?
I can do this.
Do it up.
Well, now you have heard our words. If you do not agree with us, it is only because you did not listen hard enough or have closed your mind to the truth of our message. I'm Dennis Lube with Matt Dillahunty, Russell Glasser, and Beth. And I warn you, we will be back in a week with another episode of 2 weeks with another episode of the Nonprofits. and you will see the light, or you will get more Brian Stieksma, I Am the Satellite. The choice is yours.
Hey there, brother, don't you know the guy upstairs left us years ago? So there ain't no fake except the one you make. And there ain't no hell except the shit you take every day. So don't tell me life doesn't hurt and that you don't need the people, cause you've got your church. You gotta take your head out of the sky, because there ain't no